The Monologue.
Oh, that's me. All right. By the way, this hour brought to you by You Build It. This hour, the Jason Ranch Show, Brian Suits filling in. And there's a guy, John Quinones, ABC News journalist, also a great author. He wrote a book, Dreamland, about 5 years ago about Purdue Pharma and OxyContin and anything he's and everything. He's out with a new book called The Least of Us, and it concentrates on meth and fentanyl, which the reason that you're driving around the Northwest and you're looking at people who seem a little crazier than maybe 10 years ago is because of a couple things about what they're putting in their bodies. It's not about homelessness. Anyone who continues pounding that drum is endangering you. By anyone in elected office that's not coming to terms with the fact that it is 90% a drug problem. you know, listen, there are normal, rational people who by no fault of their own are out of a home. They immediately start looking for a home, especially if they're families. If it's a matter of an abusive spouse, you know, there's places to go and all that. Overwhelmingly, the people on the streets from Portland to Seattle, L.A., San Francisco, they're on the streets because they're drug addicts. And they're drug addicts because of DNA, because of circumstance, because of bad choices. But in many cases, they're going for the cheapest high. And unfortunately, the cheapest high is making them actually crazy. And I guess here's some backstory. Here's some really good backstory. I'm assuming they still do it. The Peyton, do they still do the counting the homeless, the night of the homeless count in Seattle?
You know, if they do, they're probably wasting their time, and they can just, you know, round that thing up to a couple of commas.
I almost guarantee they still do it. And I was minding my own business, doing the 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. show on Cairo, and my fiance was, as it turns out, a bit of a liberal who's very, very full of crap. And she drugged me along one night on the night of counting the homeless. And I said, well, what do we do? And she said, oh, this is a really important event. We have to, you know, get a survey, get a census of the homeless. And I said, you mean we go as a cluster? She goes, yeah, we're gonna be in a group with Ron Sims, back when the Sims was the King County executive. And I said, well, why not split up? If you have a couple hundred people, why are they clustered in like 20 groups of 10, you know, or whatever? Why don't you split up? And she goes, well, it's for security. And I went, for what security? For what? I mean, why? What are you afraid of? No one was saying it, but they were afraid that if they went out in groups of two or three, that some homeless person might beat their ass, you know, and take that flashlight out of your hand. But the concept of the thing was that we walk around, you know, north in Belltown and down to the water all the way up to, you know, whatchamacallit park where the naked man is in the fountain with the naked boy and all that. I forgot the name of it. And with a flashlight, we sit there and flash on these sleeping homeless. And this was the deal back in 2000, is that the homeless used to go to sleep around 11 p.m., you know, empty bottles and the whole thing. And it was, and I mean, I don't want to give you too much personal detail, but my fiance at the time had a crazy job that insisted that she participate in stuff like this, and she had to drag me along so that everything looked normal. And her job was, she was a Seattle city council person. Okay. So there's that. And I was cynical from start to finish. Because I'm like, you know, this could be done other ways. Because, by the way, if you walk up to sleeping homeless people and shine a light in their face, you piss them off. You piss me off. And I'm, you know, I've got a house. If you're in my house, you're probably going to eat a bullet. But anyway, that's the one thing I noticed is that, okay, they're sleeping. Okay, so The Least of Us is John Quinones' new book. And on the one hand, you know, the homeless, you know, obviously you look around Seattle, they're in tents. But they didn't buy those tents. People are, you know, they're enabling them by giving them tents. And yes, it's raining. But ask anyone who's been in Seattle for a couple decades. They used to not use tents. They used to just, you know, be under pike or under pine or behind. Have you ever seen? I mean, it's like a campground underneath I-5 behind here at, and I'm not here, I'm in L.A., but they're at 1820 East Lake Avenue East. You go up behind. Peyton, have you ever accidentally driven too far up there, right underneath I-5?
Yeah, no, that's the way that I come into work every day.
Well, that used to be a crowd of people there, but I don't remember tents because they were basically under Seattle's drip line. They were under the viaduct, and so why the tents now? Well, there was a time, if you all recall, there was a time when they started locking up the Sudafed because meth cookers were getting the Sudafed because they needed the ephedrine to make the meth. Well, they don't use that anymore for various reasons. They use a new chemical called phenyl-2. Anyway, it's called P2P, and it's not ephedrine. And overwhelmingly, these days, the meth is bad enough. But it's also, you're no kind of a dealer, because anyone can become a fentanyl or a meth kingpin these days, because it's so easy to make. And because it's so easy to make, everyone's making it. And so because it's a market economy, it is becoming cheap, really cheap. In fact, now, if you don't mix the fentanyl in with cocaine and other drugs, someone's going to move on to a different dealer. Because the fentanyl is a different mixture also. And, never mind the black tar heroin that came up from Mexico. The fentanyl absolutely lowballs you there. It's a permanent 4th of July sale for fentanyl and meth. But what it's doing is rewiring people's brains. And whereas in his book, The Least of Us, he's talking to people who talk about meth in the 90s made you want to be social. And again, here's the obvious disclaimer. I don't do any drugs and have never done any of these drugs at all. Because I certainly, my daughter and I had a moment in our life where our life exploded because the third person in our family chose to love this stuff instead of us. And so we bounced. I'm not the only person. I'm the one talking, but if you're listening, you chances are you may be related, or you know someone who is related to someone who went through that. It's ugly. And the reason it's not going to get better is because, you know, they call them the drug cartels. A cartel is like the diamond business, like De Beers. You know, there's not a mom and pop diamond mine, because they're going to lowball you. That's a cartel. They control the pricing. It's the opposite, because anybody can make this stuff, and so they do. And it's really, really cheap. So, you know, there's that, what is it, a Netflix series about the family that owned Purdue Pharma. I got half an hour into it, and I was like, why am I watching this? This is, what's his name? The first Batman was in it. Anyway, it's pretty good, but it's just depressing.
Adam West?
No, yes, that's correct. Adam West. No, the movie Batman. Michael Keaton.
Keaton.
Yeah, he's a country doctor who's kind of the avatar, you know, for the thing. All right, so more on this from the book The Least of Us by John Quinones. What this stuff does, why it's creating this seeming increase of more insanity from the drug addict homeless that you're seeing all up and down the West Coast right after this. It's the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason today and tomorrow.
The Monologue.
Welcome back. It's the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in today and tomorrow. Talking about John Quinones's new book, The Least of Us, detailing the sort of the watershed moment that the drug addicts who comprise a majority of homeless people throughout the United States, switched from a meth that might keep them up all night to a meth that makes them crazy. And so according to experts, the new formulation of meth and fentanyl, which was invented in 1959 by those scheming Belgians. Thanks, Belgium. But specifically the new meth leads to people isolating themselves. Tents are perfect for this. And they not only retreat to a space in their heads where they don't need to be social, they don't want to be around people, but it burns in. I mean, meth is bad for you anyway. I think it was Multnomah County in Portland that were the first to do those posters of like somebody's high school senior picture, and then 10 years later on meth, you know, and their teeth are rotted away and the whole thing. And but this is a different deal. And so if you're seeing, for instance, the increase in crime last year in Seattle, and in fact all up and down the West Coast. In California, it's because we emptied the prisons of, you know, criminals, which traditionally is where you put them. And so we, in California, it was a self-inflicted wound. I mean, almost, you know, literally. But the violence amongst the homeless has absolutely skyrocketed last year and this year all up and down the West Coast. Now, you heard this number earlier this week about the record drug overdose deaths so far this year. In the 12 months ending in September of 2020, it was 87,000 deaths by overdose, according to the CDC. The year ending in September 2021 is over 100,000. So what is happening? And you know, there's lots of people who become psychotic with certain drugs. But the incidences of violent behavior by drug addicts of this new meth, which is everywhere, especially on the West Coast, is driving a lot of the violence numbers. And so, for instance, the walking bus. Wait, Pete, do you have that audio or do I have that audio? Should I?
I think you have that audio.
You do have that? Okay. This, I don't know if everyone, this happened, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. A homeless guy goes into the King County office building, the King County executive building, and he sexually assaulted somebody in the bathroom? Well, so Seattle is at a point now where they cannot guarantee the safety of county workers or anybody in downtown Seattle. And also, by the way, I never lived in Seattle at a time when anyone said, yeah, you better get out of there before dark. Oh, well, you mean 4:30? Okay, yeah, that works. But there's people who work for City of Seattle, County of King, Junior, State of Washington, who work in downtown Seattle. They can't leave till 5. And so now they've come up with the walking bus program. And this was, I'm going to say it's channel for Como 4. But and Peyton, you said you do have it?
Yeah, we got it. It is Como.
Okay, this is Como's story on this great new program to send unarmed people to escort other unarmed people safely through the streets of Seattle.
When the workday draws to a close, two security officers are now available outside the King County Courthouse to help employees safely reach their bus, train, or ferry ride home.
I think it's a smart thing.
A lot of people are scared from this area, especially under the bridge.
I mean, it's a good idea to always walk with somebody.
The guards don't carry guns, but they do have ballistic vests, pepper spray, and radios. They lead county employees from the courthouse through Pioneer Square and over to Coleman Dock, where they can board a boat. If needed, another guard can escort workers to the King Street Station if they plan to go home by bus or train.
I think it's necessary just because there's a lot going on down here in downtown.
But if I did have to go down to the ferry docks down that way or to King Street Center, I would be nervous about walking down there by myself.
Como News has been documenting the safety risks in and around the courthouse, which culminated in a sexual assault inside a bathroom. Efforts have been underway to address the crime, and the walking bus program is part of that.
And I don't like to even be out here at dusk. There's a lot of bad things that happen and that you see and that you hear.
The walking bus is in addition to security escorts already offered, where workers have been able to request a chaperone to join them to cross several city blocks.
I hope a lot of people use it, but I think it's a good idea. I think there's safety in numbers.
So you get the point, right?
The county did not.
My program would be called Stick. Here, take Stick. There'd be like an umbrella stand full of 38-inch riot sticks, possibly made of mahogany or something. But if you see the video from my friend Eric Moreno at Como News, one of the security guards, they're wearing, you know, dark uniforms. There's a King County patch and says security on the back. She's walking with her hands in her pockets. I mean, she's not looking particularly physically intimidating. And, I mean, you ask anybody in that business, 99% of why someone preys upon you, because that is what it is because you look vulnerable. You don't look confident. But anyway, so you hear that. That's where they are. Instead of vigorously prosecuting the people who are doing street crime and putting them away, no, there's going to be escorts going from Third Avenue down to the ferry dock, up and down, up and down. It's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. And this is the perfect storm that Seattle is facing. And the reason 2022 is going to make you wish it was 2021, the same way that 2021 has made you long for 2020, is because you have screwed the town out of competent cops. You've chased them off. Nobody wants to be a cop in Seattle anymore. You're going to get exactly what you wanted. That's why most of you that listen don't live in Seattle. You shake your heads. long-term fraternity brother of mine. I mean, we've known each other since we were 18 at the Washington State University. Go Cougs. And he took early retirement from SPD. And so we're catching up, and he's now in cheaper, sunnier eastern Washington, he and his wife, and we're talking. And I said, well, you know, what was, you know, when did you exactly know? And he said, well, you know, he wanted to do his time and get out with the full, you know, he could time out all this vacation. So he got out right before the summer of Chaz. He saw what was coming. And he said, dang, he rang the bell. and he knows loads and loads of younger guys that are just lateraling. And you name it. Boise, Twin Falls, you know, Moscow, Idaho, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Spokane, PD. You know, if all the ex-Seattle guys suddenly didn't come in tomorrow, and also L.A., PD, Boise would be overrun with criminals. Spokane would have half the police department gone. But he said, this is how bad it's going to be, by the way, because when you leave Seattle PD, there's all this issued gear, and you have to set an appointment with the quartermaster and sign it back in. He said the guy is 200 appointments backlogged. That's how many cops are leaving Seattle PD. So new meth, overly tolerant county and city, the cops are leaving. Yeah, I don't think the walking bus is exactly gonna do the job anymore. All right, back in a second. It is a Jason Rantz show. We talked with the former Border Patrol guy a little earlier. We'll replay some bits of that about the crisis at the border. That and more coming up. It's a Jason Rantz show. Brian Seuss filling in for Jason today and tomorrow.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Jason Rantz Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason. I know you're asking yourself, what are the Germans doing these days? Germany's about to imitate Austria's very, very strict ban on the unvaccinated walking around. So the new German vice chancellor, and I mean, this is where, like, somebody keep Jay Inslee from the internet. German vice chancellor Olaf Scholz, and this is a guy that's going to replace Angela Merkel. He says, quote, to get through the winter, we'll see drastic measures that have not been taken before, close quote. He's expected to, he's going to be the guy that succeeds Merkel. And he's looking at Austria, because nothing bad can come out of Austria, where the police are, if you're out and you are not commuting to work or actively exercising, if you're shopping in a store, they can walk up to you and say, Papieren bitte, do you have your vaccination papers? And, you know, so the Germans are looking at that saying, we like the cut of your jib on this. And, you know, I got to say, coming soon to a United States of America near you, it wouldn't surprise me. But and nearly 99% of all of the new infections are Delta variant infections. Are deaths up? Well, they're not nearly at the level they were of January of this year. You can go to COVID Tracker, and you can sort by state and county. In King County, just like everywhere in the country, King County, Snohomish County, Pierce, everywhere in Oregon, everywhere in California, January, February were the deadliest 2 months out of the entire S show. Now we all come indoors. You know, not a big surprise. For the record, my because I'm an early adopter of cool things. My daughter and I had it in February of 2020, and then so I've been donating plasma at the VA, in Van Nuys, California, and the guy in charge of the donation program asked half of us. He said, "Would half of you get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine?" So I got that. So I have a control. I have my daughter's antigens. We have that measured, and we have mine. And 3 months after I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I had no greater immunity than what I had from the natural immunity from having it. But never mind that pandemic. What about the pandemic of people crossing the American border with Mexico, by the way? And many of them, not from Mexico. Many, you know, you saw the rush of Haitians who primarily had been displaced to Colombia and Venezuela and all that. So that's why they were so mad they were being flown back to Haiti. So earlier in the show, we thought we'd bring this back for you if you're just getting in your car. Ron Vitello, former deputy director and acting director of the U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement. Extensive experience on the southern border. He was the deputy commissioner of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, chief of the U.S. Border Patrol in 2017. He served as the assistant patrol agent in charge, chief patrol agent for the Rio Grande Valley, where, like, a lot of this is happening. Then he did his Vermont time. But he joined us earlier because to help us understand what's happening at the border. By the way, follow Bill Malugin. On Twitter, Fox News national correspondent. He's a friend of mine, M-E-L-U-G-I-N, doing great, great work down there, phenomenal work. Follow him on Twitter. He puts his stuff up immediately. You'll see him on Fox from time to time. He gets just the best footage. It's raw, and it's the stuff you're not seeing on any other outlet because it's embarrassing to the Biden administration. But we talked with Ron Vitello, and my first question for him is to help people understand. Characterize, if you will, this is from a little while ago, characterize, if you can, what's going on at the southern border.
Well, it's like any other crime. If the police don't enforce the law, then people are not, there's no consequence to committing a crime. So if you let people come to the border, now in the situation where you've got more than 40% of the Border Patrol doing the care and comfort and processing mission versus patrolling that border, the likelihood of you being arrested at the border is quite low, right? You got a better than 40% chance of escaping without detection. And then many of the people who are caught and detained have young children with them, and all the children that are alone are being released. And so what that does is it encourages them to, when they settle in places like Los Angeles, where you are, or Seattle, or Dallas, Texas, that they call home and they tell all of their friends and relatives that we've gone soft. The Americans have gone soft at the border. If you're going to come, now is the time. We've also doubled down on the policy side and told ICE they can't arrest people who are not crossing the border immediately. They're not convicted aggravated felons or a threat to public safety. So if you're in the country illegally just because you're illegal, they're prohibited from approaching you as an ICE officer. And then we're talking rhetorically about giving amnesty to every person that's in the country illegally. And so we've encouraged everybody that's in the third world and or near the third world to come because, you know, we've gone soft at the border.
And it's funny because the president and the vice president are absolutely mystified. They literally are denying that if the word gets out that, you know, if they arrest you, you get a yellow ticket, a notice to appear. If you don't appear, they don't come find you. If you do appear and they don't give you asylum, they still don't deport you. I mean, they're denying that that is a magnet. So, I mean, in your years of experience actually on that border, how much is, I mean, in other words, is there a rat line? Does the word get out? Hey, Trump isn't president anymore. You cross, they give you water, and that's that. I mean, that really boils down to the villages.
Yeah, well, people see with their own eyes what's happening on the border. We saw the nearly 15,000 Haitian migrants that, you know, were on the ground in a shantytown inside of the United States. The following weekend, the secretary went on television and was encouraged by how many of them had been released into the United States with a notice to appear. And you think that they are not going to tell everybody that they know that wants to come here? Now is the time, because it's the, you know, believe what you see with your own eyes. But despite what people are saying about why this is happening, it's all about the policy. We've reinstituted what we used to call a catch and release problem. This isn't the first surge that the department has seen. It's the worst ever. It's the worst in the history of the U.S.-Mexico border. But there was a surge in 2014. It was ended under the Obama-Biden administration by using detention to hold people until they had their fair due process hearing in immigration court. The 2020 surge was ended when Mexico stepped up and helped us, and we instituted the Remain in Mexico policy, which allowed people, again, to have their due process in immigration court. But instead of being released in the United States as they are today, they were allowed to wait in Mexico until those hearing dates were posted.
U.S. officials, there's a three-way policy get-together today with Canada and Mexico. U.S. officials have said border policy will not be even brought up. So what does that tell you about the priority with this administration and the border, Ron?
Well, obviously, they don't care to fix this problem. And, you know, Mexico did a lot under the last administration because they were essentially were threatened with sanctions and a deterioration of the NAFTA accords. And now why would they help us? Our own policy is encouraging people to come here. Why would Mexico step up to try to help us secure that border?
Yeah,
they never did before until they were sort of forced into it. And now they would be laughing at the request because our policy is encouraging this flow. And let me just say that, you know, the people who were in that pipeline, you talked about these people that were kidnapped in your area. That happens all throughout the pipeline. These people are taken advantage of by corrupt governments and officials.
There he goes, Ron Vitello, a former deputy director and former acting director of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, talking to us a couple hours ago. And a couple other things, by the way. You know, the disincentive for Mexico is that the transfers, the money transfers from the U.S. to Mexico are a significant revenue stream in Mexico. I mean, they have a financial incentive to allow, from their end of the filter, wide open immigration. But it's the same with Guatemala and Honduras, and now they're coming from even for the south. And this is what's funny is at the southern Mexican border, they're total hard asses. I mean, people have said, they've openly told, you know, Telemundo that the Mexican army at the Mexican Central American border are just bastards. Nowhere near like what happens when they get into the United States. And then, so the deal is, if they are rolled up by Border Patrol or... now the governor of Texas, Abbott, you know, is rolling his people out there, and the Texas Army National Guard who can be deputized. They're enforcing immigration laws that they're allowed to do. Okay, so you get a hearing. Here's the thing. They don't show up for their hearing. Okay, so if they do show up for their hearing and they make their case about some local crime, well, my husband beats me, which, by the way, isn't grounds for asylum. However, if you're told it's not granted, you must leave the country within, 12 days, they don't follow up on that. I mean, it's almost just an administrative check the box thing, you know, and that's part of the reason that they cross the border and then sit down. Because, I mean, why run? You know, you'll just get arrested all sweaty because you're going to be out one way or another. And so this is, by the way, if you're wondering, if you planted, we'll take a break here in a second. But I'll tell you, has somebody from the Republican Party actually infiltrated the Biden administration? And they're running down a playbook of how to get a Republican Congress a year from now? I'll give you that answer right after this. Also, what is happening on the Belarus-Polish border? This is a big deal becoming a bigger deal, and it's going to become a big NATO deal very soon if something unfortunate happens. I'll give you a background on that. When we come back, Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz on the Jason Rantz Show. Back in a second on AM 770 KTTH.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Once again, a story you can't believe is real, but Jason Rantz of Seattle confirms it is.
Seattle residents are outraged.
Jason, tell us the state of the Seattle Police Department.
Jason Rantz is with us. This is your story. I want you to take us all the way through.
Thank you for being the person to go in there and show us what's happening.
The Quick Hit.
Welcome back. It's the Jason Rantz Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz. He'll be back tomorrow. In the inter-border area between Belarus, run by Europe's last commie dictator, Alexander Lukashenko, and Poland, both sides have the physical barriers that mark the border are offset further into their soil, so that if anything happens, it's going to happen on Polish soil, or it's going to happen on Belarusian soil. In that no man's land, the Putin and Lukashenko have been funneling migrants from Afghanistan, Iraq, whatever, in there because they're trying to precipitate a humanitarian crisis, which they have, mission accomplished. So they've weaponized refugees. There's these young men in their 20s from Afghanistan and Iraq who were flown from Baghdad, from parts of Iran, directly into Minsk, and then they were driven by bus by the Belarusian border guard and then kicked into this area, and they're being orchestrated, they're being choreographed. BBC had a reporter there, and they're sitting there. This is the crazy part. They're trying to make the case that they need to come into the EU for asylum, and they're throwing rocks at the Polish army. They're throwing rocks at Polish border guards, and the Poles had to call up the army. The Latvians and Lithuanians have for their border with Belarus. But they're sitting here throwing rocks. So they're making their case of, yes, I'm such a downtrodden refugee here. Eat a brick. And what Moscow wants and what Lukashenko wants is they want for Poland, an EU member, they want for some 18 or 19-year-old private to get the yips and empty a magazine into a crowd of refugees. That's what they want. Why is this? Because the EU has onerous and robust sanctions against Lukashenko and Putin. And you can tell they're working because this is what their countermeasure is. You know, the next step for Putin is, like, shut off the natural gas. And I think he's not past that because he's already made those noises over the last couple of weeks. I was talking with Todd Herman on my regular Tuesday Hits with Todd Herman about that 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, this is one of the most cynical things I've seen since Putin invaded Crimea and then held that referendum that passed by 99%. So anyway, it's ugly, and it's all precipitated. It's all based on getting something ugly and blaming it on the EU, because then Putin and Lukashenko can say, oh, we're the bad guys. Look at this. We thought the arms open Europeans and the whole thing. And look at this. There are people freezing to death. They've already had people literally freezing to death Because, you know, you're taking people from Iraq, where, for the record, it snows in Iraq, but nobody camps in the snow. So they're not, and here's the deal, they're not letting them back into Belarus. They're saying the way to the EU is right there. You know, look as downtrodden as you possibly can. Get in character and scene. So there's that. A drama is playing out. In Oklahoma, the governor fired his commander of the Oklahoma Army and Air National Guard, the adjutant general, the TAG, fired him because he was all for the Pentagon's COVID mandate for the members of the Oklahoma Army and Air National Guard. He's appointed, he let him go rather abruptly, and now the new guy's in there. And the governor said, I'm not going to make Oklahoma National Guard personnel get the COVID vaccine. And if you're thinking, oh, well, they're in the National Guard, they have to do what the Pentagon says. Well, unless you're called up, you work for the governor. That's called Title 32 time. You're a state employee. And this state governor said, you're not getting it. So anyway, there's a showdown. Is it Final Rants? It's Final Rants.
The Last Rants.
I don't know. Did you guys see Red Notice?
Red Notice?
Yeah.
No. Did not see Red Notice. I am so far behind. I just watched Shang-Chi the other day. Shang-Chi.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, commie lover. do you like the Ryan Reynolds?
Yes, I like Ryan Reynolds.
Okay. They just call the movie Ryan Reynolds is a smart ass to the Rock.
And that's great.
Watch. It's great. It's terrific. It doesn't reach too far. It doesn't exceed its reach. It's if you like your Ryan Reynolds, you know, short and sharp and sarcastic, you have him in a concentrated form. Also, watch for the product placement of his gin, of aviation gin. Hint: it's in the ballet scene. But anyway, it's good. I liked it. I laughed real hard. Oh, you know what I've noticed? That Gal Gadot, the one who's Wonder Woman. If the light catches her just right, she's kind of a smoke show. Shrink Next Door, Paul Rudd, the world's sexiest man, Will Ferrell. Here's the crazy thing about this. I went into it thinking it was funny. It's trying to be funny. It's not funny. And you would think that two guys that were in Anchorman, that it would be funny. It's not. There's nothing funny about it. So, screw you, Apple TV. Also, I don't know, No Time to Die. I finally got through that. Long movie. A huge Bond fan. Does everyone know how it ends? I don't want to do a spoiler, but my mix. If you guys haven't seen it, I'm gonna walk you down off the ledge and say, not a must see Bond film. Not really a must see Bond film. So, all right, more tomorrow. Brian Suits in for Jason Rance. Thanks to Jason. I'll be back tomorrow for a big Friday Jason Rance show. Out and Ben Shapiro's up next on AM 570. KTTH.